And this tonight we're looking to try to wrestle with, to try to understand our responsibility when we are suffering because the world is broken. In a very real way, all of these problems could fit under one heading. But I want to break them out into these ways. And you know, last night we talked about Joseph. And Joseph was unjustly suffered. And you could say he was treated unjustly because we live in a broken world or a fallen world, or that would fit. But the brokenness I want to talk about tonight is maybe things like cancer, or my stories about one of my nephews who has spina bifida. The brokenness that comes from just being alive, just being here. And we're going to study the story of Ruth and of Orpha. And it's one of my favorite adoption stories because it is actually an adoption story. You know, Joseph was adopted by the king of Egypt, but he was a bit of an old man already, and he became a very powerful second in command. But this story is a story where it's more happened to a younger lady, to Ruth and to Orpha. And to Naomi. So we're gonna study that. Our adoption verse for the night is, and not only they, Romans 8:23, and not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, or in other words, or just so you understand, the redemption of our body. So he's saying adoption is the same word as redemption. We don't think about it that way. We think about adoption so often being, it's kind of a sterile word that means turned out or didn't turn out or something. It's not, we don't associate it correctly. Because we don't act it out correctly. Adoption is redemption. It's a second choice. It's the first one broke, and the next one came along. God had a second plan, and we act out the second plan, and that's a good plan. That's the redemption plan. That's God's plan for us. Our question tonight for the small groups, if you want to write this down or think about it at least, tell of a time when you suffered because you live in a broken world. And try to be honest and say, did you choose Ruth's path or did you choose Orpha's path? So tell of a time, discuss a time, wrestle with a time. Maybe it's right now. Maybe it's something current. Maybe it's years ago. I don't know. I don't know what will be laid on your heart for your small group, but wrestle with it. And which path did you choose? Well, let's look at the paths they chose. Tonight we want to continue our skill-building exercise of truly seeing each other. When you're in your small group and here in church and in your neighborhood and as you walk the paths of life, how do we see people? How do we really see them? We can see the shell, we can see the body, but can we see somebody's soul? Man is made in God's image. Does that mean we have God's eyes and ears and nose and mouth? Is God about the same height as me? What does that mean, made in God's image? Is it something more? Do we look in someone's eyes? I know you've all walked past the casket and you've looked there. And the person's gone. They're there, but they're gone. The something that you're looking for just isn't there anymore. How does one define being alive, or what? Why is life sacred? Carrying on with the theme of being on God's ball team. Revelation says he's going to build a kingdom out of kings and priests. So when you look at, when I'm looking at you, I'm seeing in you, I'm seeing in each one of you a king, and I'm seeing a priest, because you look like you're on God's ball team. So that's what I see when I look at you. I see a king and I see a priest. And your Bible scholars, you know what it means to be a king in the days. They tell us in the Old Testament, it says, I'm the king, God says, the king, they know my will. They know what to do. They know my will. They understand the divine, and they tell us what they can tell people what is the divine will of God. And I see that. I listen to that. I hear that from you as I've interacted with you. I hear the divine will of God. This is what we should be doing. And then he says he's going to make it out of kings and priests. And we were all there in the bedroom with Samuel, you know, and he heard the voice, Samuel. And we all know, we've been taught from little up, it's our tradition that someday you'll hear a voice. And that voice will say your name. It might be in the hayfield, it might be in the dark of night, it might be standing in front of, when you're caught doing something wrong, but someday you're going to hear it and you're going to say, you're either going to answer, yes, Lord, I'm listening, or you're going to say, no, that's not for me. I'm not gonna listen. There aren't any other choices. You will choose one of those two ways. And you'll be a priest for the kingdom of God, or you'll be on a road going nowhere. You'll be on the winning team with all of heaven's power behind you, or you'll be living in your own head going into chaos and disorder and eternity without God. So when I see you, I see that. I do see kings and priests. I see the image of God. There's something, it's very interesting to be here. It's important to remember as we go into this study that seeing and reflecting the image of God is not being God. And there's many, many times we get that mixed up. Our world has that completely turned around. They see the image of God and they say, hey, you are God. You're very God-like. You're smart. You're God. And they say that and they act it out and they live it. Where it's all about the Bill of Rights and what I have. I'm. And there's something true there, but like all things that are wrong, it's being an image is not the same as being. Part of the problem we can do that God can't do is we can get deceived. So being deceived, the saddest part about being deceived is that we don't know it because we're deceived, right? That's why God put me in a body like this. I go to a church just like this and of people that are keeping the all things, and I can trust them. I can say, hey, here's my wild idea. And they say, yeah, that is actually a wild idea. And I've chosen that I'm going to believe them over what I think. Not only that, this is a little fun math experiment, but if the earth recorded history at least is 6,000 years old, if there's four generations per hundred, that's 60 hundreds, times four is 240 people. So 240 moms, 240 dads take us back to Eve. So 480 people. You could know 480 people. You could know every one of your grandpas and grandmas back to Eve. That's not impossible. You probably do know 480 people. What did they believe? What did they know? What did they leave for you? What did Grandma 57 believe? What did Grandpa 155 believe? What did Grandma 240 believe? What did they believe? What did they hand forward to you? to me. What did they do? Well, being part of a tradition like I am, it's probably safe to believe. Well, the fact that I'm here, they believed in moms and dads for life, right? Some version of that. They believed in the sanctity of life, because certainly it's easier to just terminate a baby than it is to raise them. Babies are messy and hard, and they don't go to town very well. And, you know, babies are in the way. And they believe something beyond themselves, or I wouldn't be here and you wouldn't be here. They believed in the sanctity of life. And if they believed in that, why? What does that mean to you? I think even in America, it's taught every man has inalienable rights. Where did that idea come from? Where is that? You know, for the first 300 years after Jesus' time, for the first 12 grandparents, it was the early church. And we as God's people, the old order churches are practicing as close to the early church. You'd be surprised. Pull out a standard book from some of those early churches and look through your faith and practice. It's amazingly how they articulated a lot of the same principles. And then you know, our churches don't monetize very well. It's a free gift, free salvation. And so the Catholic Church, when it became part of the church and state, they needed money. So they started selling forgiveness for sins. That's the Catholic Church. But the Catholic Church has always taught, and they're right, they taught about sin, that we have a sin problem. And 500 years ago, there was a three-way split. There was the split from the Catholic Church when Menno Simon said, hey, we can't monetize this thing. I can't actually forgive people. And just point the way. And the Catholic Church, you know, they chased them through the mountains and tried to kill them. And there was another man there that said, you know, it's a little bit like Cinderella. The fairy godmother comes down and hits you with her wand, and from then on, you're ready for the ball. You know, that's a Protestant evangelical idea. And that takes a lot of our people, and we think, wow, you know, why am I still struggling? I've been hit with the magic wand of salvation, and I'm still struggling. I must not be saved. That's a tradition that's not our tradition. Our tradition is we get hit with the magic wand and then we start playing ball, and you know, we go out for the first many times. We need to learn to hold the bat, and we get good at it. That sanctification thing I talked about last night. So that's the background that we want to really look at, this broken world. How does that fit in when I see you, and I see you living in a broken world? I see all that. I see God, and I see people that are learning how to be ball players in God's game. And I see I have a responsibility to tell you what God's will is. And I have a responsibility to listen to you for what God's will is and blend that. So we're going to look at Ruth. If you want to look at Ruth, the first chapter, number 4, verse 4. We pick up here when the men, there was a famine and they were wound up down here in Moab, and they were farming down there and there was food. And so they found girls to marry down there, and they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpha, and the name of the other was Ruth, and they dwelt there about 10 years. And we jump to verse 14, and by the time we get to verse 14, the men had died. All of them, all three men had died. And they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpha kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. And you know what had happened is my very favorite evangelical revival sermon right here. You want to preach a revival sermon, preach Ruth 1:13. You can't do this. Just stay in the world. It's actually easier. We try to make this an easy thing to do, and it's not. It's hard to be a Christian. It's a hard work. It takes everything. And we may as well just be up front with people right away. You know, if you want to adopt into a family, if you want to become, you want to change your last name, and you want to actually experience true adoption, redemption, it's going to take everything, every last piece of it. We may as well just be honest about that. It's traumatic and hard. And Ruth is the perfect convert. She says in 1:16, "And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee or return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God." And Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which 1:22, verse 22. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab. And they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of barley harvest. We never read about Orpha again. She didn't make it into the Hall of Fame in the Bible. She's gone. She's off the pages of history. But we're going to read a lot about Ruth, and it's a choice. Remember, adoption is a choice. We're going to read about her choice. She made that choice, and we'll find out if she means it. Chapter 2, verse 2. "And Ruth the Moabite said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, my daughter." You know, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, all the social medias, they're really hard on our ladies. They're especially hard on ladies because it's a competition to be accepted. And this competition is old. This competition is something Ruth faced, how to be accepted. I don't know if it was why it was. What was maybe she had bad cell service or something. She didn't have her phone, and so she went to work. And there's something about a competent woman. There's something about a competent lady that just picks up her work and goes and does it. You know, this wasn't fun. You know, a lot of these young men have helped come out to the harvest in Oregon and have helped us with the harvest, and it's hard work, long hours, dusty. They come in at supper time, wore out. It takes something out of you to do harvest. They don't look good. That's not the best look you'll ever see them. They look different than they look tonight, but they look useful. And there's something beyond the moment. And that's what Ruth said. She said, you know, it's going to be winter time. I better do what I can. And Ruth 2:8 says, "And then Boaz said unto her, hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but bide fast here by my maidens." In 2:21, and Ruth the Moabite said, she's talking to her mother-in-law, and she said, "He said unto me also, thou shalt keep fast by my young men until they have ended all my harvest." And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that thou go with his maidens, and that they meet thee not in any other field." You know, I being in the way God led me is a principle. If we're faithful, we don't have to be smart. We don't have to understand the stock market. We just need God on our side, and we'll find the right field. We'll, you know, Israel's a big place, and she wound up in Boaz's field. You know, if she had slept in that morning, who knows? Who knows? But there she was. She was somehow, this girl was in the right field. Ruth, chapter 3, verse 9. She's talking to Boaz. You know, by now she had caught his eye. But why is this? What is going on here? And he said, "Who art thou?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." She said, you know, you have, what you're saying is, help me. You know, I'm here. I'll do my part. Please help me. And he was a just and righteous man. Well, in Ruth 4:5, it says, "And then said Boaz, What day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy also of Ruth, the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. And this man probably turned down the best deal of his life, I think. He could have had Ruth, and he turned her down. I don't know why. Maybe her cell phone was still off, and she didn't look like she was dressed for town or something. But he turned down this lady and Boaz stepped in and assumed the responsibilities. And then in Ruth 4:10 we see, moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren, and from the gate of the place ye are witnesses, that of witnesses this day. So Boaz took Ruth, verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth as his wife, and when he went in unto her, the Lord gave conception, and she bare a son. And Naomi took the son and put her on her knees and was comforted in her old age. And we see a successful adoption, don't we? We see a mother who had a daughter and a grandson, a son-in-law, in a very messy, broken-up home. You know, all the men were dead. This is a miracle of redemption in a lost world. But it's a message of hope for us tonight. The ending isn't at the grave. The ending is at the cross, where we're redeemed. Matthew chapter 1, verse 5 says, and Solomon begat Boaz of Rechab, and Boaz begat Obed of Ruth, and Obed begat Jesse. And if you read on and on, this lady was in the lineage of Jesus. She was one of those grandmas that believed, that we were talking about earlier. So a personal story. I want to tell a story about my nephew Zachary. Zachary was born with an open spine. This means he needed surgery to close it up as soon as he was born. They saw it in the womb and they had it everything ready. It means he was born. He was born without the ability to run or dance or play. It means for the first years of his life, he spent many months in the hospital getting poked with needles and sewing machines and lots of trauma. Means that one of the things that's missing in Zachary is there's a little valve in the base of your skull. And that valve is where the fluid goes in and out of your brain, because your brain needs a certain amount of fluid to just be in there and be safe from bumps and jumps. And that fluid, as you stand up and go down, it equalizes the pressure, and it's missing. So he needed to have a hole drilled in his head right away, and they drilled a hole in his head, and they ran a tube into that hole, and that has a little valve in there. It's a smart valve that equalizes that pressure, and there's a hose run down under his skin into his belly. And that all that means is, sounds simple and it sounds easy, and it just means that when men try to replicate one little piece of the human body, it's a big deal. Well, when you're a little child like that and you grow, you're growing so fast, it's hard to keep up with. And so his that tube and that little valve is called a shunt, and his shunt would get plugged. And when his shunt would get plugged, he'd have a seizure. And seizures are really terrible things. If you ever experience one, they're heart wrenching. They're painful. The body goes into starts to seize. It goes and you think they're going to die, or it's worse than dying. Really, it's terrible. And so my brother Matt and his wife spent a lot of time in ambulances getting high-speed rides to the university hospital, because the local hospital couldn't deal with it. And back in under the knife, and they'd clean out the valve. And many times, you know, I don't know, but it seems like 4 to 6 times a year for those first years. And every time was traumatic and hard. And I remember several times my brother does the sales for my brother Matt. His dad does the sales for the business. And he'd be on a sales trip, and there was several times, because brothers are born for adversity, I got to do that ride, and I was in the hospital in Portland. And the first thing they do is they take them in and stick them in an MRI. And if you've ever been in an MRI, you know the first thing they say is, you care if we kill you? Well, we're going to kill you this way, this way, this way. And you have to be okay with that. And then they say, and in order to see how to kill you, we're going to have to run some nuclear waste through your veins, and it's going to light you up like a Christmas tree. And this will probably shave years off your life. Do you care if we're going to run this nuclear waste through your body? You know, by the time they're done talking, you're just terrified. But anyways, they put this nuclear waste in these little guy. And you sit there and hold his hand, and they run. He has to be dead still for a long time. I don't know what it is in minutes or hours or decades or how long it actually is, but it's a long time. You're holding this little guy. And you just think, where is God? How can God let this be? He's the king of the universe, and this is a baby. Like, where is he? And, you know, the story is that I don't know. It's hard. I don't know where God is sometimes in those things. I just know he's there. I don't know where he is. But Zachary's story is one that from this little guy, he spends his life in a wheelchair. And you would think from somebody who has everything about Zachary's life is hard. All eating's hard. Everything is hard. There's nothing easy about it. And you would think if anybody should be lost in depression and gone in self-pity, why isn't he? But instead, Zachary, I don't think I've ever heard him complain. He's always cheerful. Everybody who knows him is his friend, and he'd be interested in you if he was here today. He would talk to you, and he'd be interested in you. And he has an amazing gift. He has some handicaps, intellectual handicaps, but he has an amazing gift in that Zachary can can get to a piano, and by ear, he can play any song you ask him to play. And when he leads singing in our church often, and when he gets up front in his wheelchair, and he says to all of us, please stand and let's sing. Think about it. Please stand and let's sing from a wheelchair. And I don't know, I have a bad day if I don't have enough money to reach around for today's bills or something. It's so unfair, life is. And yet he's such a testimony of that. So he's chosen what I say is the Ruth. He's chosen to accept his responsibility and be a challenge to all of us. So tonight when we talk about when we get into the small groups here, it's the next part of this, and we think about what does it mean to suffer because of a broken world. There's a few things to think about. The idea, there are two responses. One way is to adopt the kingdom of God, and the other is to stay in the world. It's actually really hard to make the right choice. It's simple. It's a simple choice, but it's actually really hard. Sometimes We need to lose what we have so we can give the next, so we can get the next thing God is going to give us. A lot of times, being faithful in something menial and trivial, but inside our capabilities, is all that God wants from us. You know, Ruth, she just picked up wheat. And trust me, that's an easy thing to do. That she didn't have to go to college. She just had to pick up wheat. Adoption means we have suffered, been traumatized, and left alone. And it is possible to be stuck in the trauma and suffering. There is, in fact, there's so much loss in adopted children, people, all of our lives, that it's sometimes easier just to hold on to the pain, because giving up the pain is another loss. And we just don't want to lose anything more, so we hold on to pain, because at least we think we own it. So that's our story of Ruth and Naomi and Orpha's adoption. And we're going to break up into our small groups now. So if you want to come help me with that.